Stone.
May it please the court, my name is Maya Song. I'm a senior law student licensed under Rule 711, and I represent the defendant appellant in this case, Mr. Larry Williams. The district court committed clear error in this case because it gave Mr. Williams a bench trial when the record did not indicate that Mr. Williams had knowingly and intelligently waived his fundamental right to a jury trial. Because the district court's error was clear in this respect, this court should vacate Mr. Williams' conviction and remand for a new trial.
Is there any evidence at all in the record about the nature and extent of any conversations Mr. Williams may have had with his counsel about waiving his right to a jury trial?
Your Honor, the evidence that exists is in the attached appendix to the opening brief, which is that there is none in this record. The record does not show that Mr. Williams knowingly and intelligently waived his right to a jury trial because it does not establish that he had a concrete understanding of what that right was. There's no indication in the record that by agreeing to waive his right, Mr. Williams understood that what he was agreeing to do was have Judge Anderson, the same individual who was deciding all issues of law in his case, be the sole adjudicator of all issues of fact in this case, and to be the final decision maker on Mr. Williams's guilt or innocence. This is what is required to have a concrete understanding of the right. There's nothing in the record that shows that he had this understanding, because his attorney at the November 2006 status conference never says that he had consulted with Mr. Williams, explained to Mr. Williams the circumstances of the waiver and the consequences of waiver. He merely said that he had been in contact with his client and that at that point they were moving for a bench trial. Judge Anderson, in return, never...
There was no motion made in the district court to withdraw the waiver. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
We're here on a plain error standard. And on a plain error standard, the defendant bears the burdens of both production and persuasion, so the Supreme Court has held. So what is there in this record that supports the view that he did not know these things?
First, Your Honor, I would raise two facts that go to this question. The first is, because this is a direct appeal, the defendant is not allowed to introduce extrinsic evidence. This court is confined to the record that was established in the trial court.
Actually not true. You can file a motion for a new trial in the district court and introduce extrinsic evidence.
And Mr. Williams did file a motion for a new trial after his conviction. But
was the motion accompanied by such things as an affidavit saying, I was ignorant of X, or my attorney misinformed me about Y?
So the motion that he filed for new trial after his conviction was not did not raise this issue. This issue is being raised for the first time on direct appeal.
Right, but that's the problem. The Supreme Court says that if you want to challenge waivers under the plain error standard, you need to show this was not something you didn't know already. And that apparently is, he's never even tried to do that.
I think that this court's decision in Robinson is significant to the point, the question that you are raising. In Robinson, another direct appeal to this court, there was again no indication in the record, the defendant asserted, that showed that he had knowingly waived his right. This court found that it agreed with the defendant in that case, that the record was indeed silent. And what it did was it vacated Robinson's conviction and remanded for an evidentiary hearing on whether the waiver is knowing and intelligent. If that is the remedy that this court believes is appropriate in Mr. Williams's case, then we welcome that remedy as well. In any event, Robinson is very similar to this case in that the record fails to show affirmative evidence that the defendant had a personal understanding of the right he was waiving, and therefore the record must be read as lacking evidence of the validity of the waiver, and therefore it was clear error for the district court to proceed by granting a bench trial.
All of this just sounds like disagreement with the Supreme Court's holding in cases like Vaughn about what happens, how one makes out plain error on appeal when the district court did not give advice to the defendant. That's what cases like Vaughn are all about, or Dominguez-Benitez?
I would submit that this court has never found that a record as sparse as the one in this case was sufficient to show that the waiver had been knowing and intelligent. Furthermore, all the cases that the government cites to support its argument, the majority of those cases, rather, are cases where the petitioner had an opportunity to introduce extrinsic evidence at hearings, whether through an evidentiary hearing at the district court or through a writ for the petition for the writ of habeas corpus. This is not such a case. Mr. Williams has not been given that opportunity. Mr. Williams has not had that opportunity again because...
Perhaps then I should ask the question whether you really want to pursue this. If you think that additional evidence is essential and is not yet in the record, do you want to pursue this argument at all, or do you want to withdraw it and seek the opportunity to file a petition under 2255 later? Because if you pursue it now, you can't pursue it later. Right? Once it's been adjudicated on direct appeal, you can't try again on 2255.
We're pursuing this claim now, Your Honor, because we believe strongly that the case law is clear.
It's not a question whether you believe something strongly. Right? And I've said that, at least in my understanding of the Supreme Court's doctrine, you need evidence in the record of the defendant's actual ignorance of what a bench trial is. We all agree the record doesn't have that. Now, I suppose you can litigate now the question whether such evidence is necessary, but the alternative is not to litigate it now, litigate it on 2255, when we would know what the defendant's actual knowledge was. The only thing I'm pointing out is you can't litigate it twice. You can't litigate it now and lose, and then try again on a different record.
Thank you for that. I mean, what we would suggest then is that, like this court's action in Robinson, which was again a direct appeal, not a Section 2255 motion, that this court again consider, as it did in Robinson, that because the record is silent as to the knowingness of the waiver, that it should, at the very least, vacate and remand for an evidentiary hearing in the district court.
Williams wasn't present at the status hearing when his counsel requested a bench trial, was he?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And counsel's remark was, and I'm sort of quoting, that he had been in contact with Williams. But that doesn't confirm that he had discussed the jury trial waiver with Williams, does it?
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
And when the day of the trial arrived, there was the most perfunctory waiver, and I would say partially leading colloquy between the court and Williams. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, Your Honor. I see that my time has expired. If I may just expand on the answer.
Your time has not expired.
Apologies. I was reserving time for rebuttal. That's exactly right. The colloquy that occurred at Mr. Williams' trial did not use layperson's terms with regard to what a jury trial entails and what the consequences of waiver is. Judge Anderson merely asked my client, so you understand that you have a right to a jury trial and that you're waiving your jury right and instead going to the bench trial. This is not sufficient, as this court itself has recognized in De Robertis, to explain to a layperson like Mr. Williams the differences between a jury trial and a bench trial. It doesn't explain to the defendant that by waiving the right, he's agreeing to have the judge determine all issues of fact in the case and be the sole decision maker.
What you need to think about between now and the next few minutes is counsel's ineffectiveness and the possibility of 2255. So you have some time.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Song. Mr. Mariotti.
May it please the court. My name is Renato Mariotti, and I represent the government in this appeal. The only question before this court is whether the defendant's waiver of his right to a jury trial was knowing and intelligent.
Well, we can't even tell from this record whether Mr. Williams' counsel even discussed the jury trial waiver with him, can we?
Mm-hmm. Well, Your Honor, I think that I think that a reasonable inference can be drawn given that he had one counsel who stated
inference can't be drawn. We're simply ignorant. We don't know whether he did or didn't. Now, why isn't that something on which, if we're going to get anywhere intelligently, we need evidence? We need to hear from Mr. Williams. We might need to hear from his lawyer about what happened. It's easy to imagine that all this was discussed, or it's easy to imagine that Williams was utterly ignorant and confused and hadn't a clue. I mean, normally when one raises an argument like this, you need some evidence.
And if the burden of proof was on the government to show that there was a valid waiver, I think that would be well taken, Your Honor. I think the reality here, though, is that the burden of proof is on the defendant. And as Your Honor pointed out earlier, there, you know, not only did the defendant fail to submit an affidavit challenging his waiver in the district court, but there's not even an allegation in the appellate brief.
So my question to you is very similar to my question to Ms. Song, which is, why doesn't one just say, this is not the time or the place? If there is a time and a place, it's by an action under 2255. Now, if the defendant insists that it be resolved on an empty record, then I suppose the defendant loses, given the burden of plain error review. But it doesn't sound like an intelligent way to proceed. Well, the only burden of my point.
Your Honor, I can't question the defense counsel's strategy. That's their decision to make. But, you know, in the position that we are now, I think Your Honor's correct. There is no evidence here. And the question is whether or not the defendant has proved that there was clear error in the district court's finding below. You know,
clear error is not the standard. This is plain error. There was no argument made on this in the district court. Both sides are citing cases like Robinson that were decided before Vaughn and Dominguez-Benitez clarified what the standard of review is in situations like this. The standard of review is the plain error standard.
Well, Your Honor, whether under either standard, I don't think that the defendant has met his burden of proof. Really, all the defendant does is point to the lack of Delgado colloquy, the lack of evidence, but really the burden is on the defendant to present evidence. And there just, you know, isn't even, as I was alluding to earlier, there's not even a statement in the briefs in terms of what an evidentiary hearing would look like on remand, you know, that
well,
he would present.
Wouldn't it be fun to know? Here's a guy who walks into a courtroom. He's been in a jail for 2 years. The judge says, okay, we're going to do a bench trial. This is the United States of America. Defendants have waivers of jury trials that are informed, that are voluntary choices, where we know that the lawyer discussed it carefully. At the very least, that the fellow is standing there at the status hearing when his counsel says, "Well, we're going to take a bench trial," and this is a terrible record, isn't it?
Well,
isn't it?
Certainly, Your Honor, it would have been preferable.
Oh, come on.
It's not an ideal record, Your Honor.
Not an ideal record. There's just nothing in it one way or the other.
I disagree with that respectfully, Your Honor. I think that there is something here. You know, we have a statement by defense counsel that he was in contact with his client and that they wished to have a bench trial.
Keep in mind that that defense counsel was then fired.
Well, that's right. That's right, Your Honor.
We appreciate the argument that if in the end all we have is an empty record, then all we have is an empty record, and on plain error review the defendant loses. That's what happens on plain error review with an empty record. But the question we're asking is, why is it sensible for the judicial system to decide cases like this on empty records?
That's fine. That's really a question for defense. I can't determine why
Don't
they brought this.
Do you want to come back and see us again?
As often as possible, Your Honor. but in terms of what's here, I do think that there is something. I don't take the record as empty, respectfully, Your Honor. I think you don't just have a defendant, you know, who was brought here and didn't know what was going on. You have a defendant who he fired these counsel because he was making pro se motions to the court when he wasn't getting enough contact. You know, he felt he wasn't getting enough contact with his counsel. And you had multiple counsel here. You had the second counsel, you know, the second counsel saying he wished to have a bench trial, both verbally and in a brief. Then you had another defense counsel who was there when he made this waiver and proceeded with the bench trial. It's unclear what these defense counsel told the client or how they would testify at an evidentiary hearing. But my point is just that it's not quite empty.
Well, I have a point of curiosity.
Sure.
Aren't the district courts equipped with written jury waiver forms at the clerk's desk that are readily available for use in this sort of situation? I would think that would be the case.
I do believe they are, Your Honor. However, I mean, as this court has noted in more than once, a written jury waiver isn't required for a valid waiver, despite what the federal rules are.
But they still use them, right?
They do. They do, Your Honor, and they do regularly use them. And I do agree that this is not an ideal record. There's something missing here, to put it mildly. All right, if there are no further questions, I'll rest on my feet.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Ms. Sol.
Decision time.
First, I would like to say that we appreciate the court's advice. Unfortunately, I can't make that decision without consulting with my client,
right.
And
well,
I would ask...
give you 10 days to consult with your client and see how he would like to proceed. I hope you will advise him of the risks incurred one way or the other.
And
lest we have another proceeding at which somebody says, well, Ms. Song did not advise me of the risks of my not being advised of my lawyer, did not.
That doesn't happen, but we appreciate
well, we
the time.
We don't want an infinite regress.
And we certainly don't want it to happen to you before you're even a lawyer. Even though you certainly act like one. Both of you today.
I guess then if there are no further questions, then we'll rest. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And Ms. Song, we appreciate your willingness and that of the Legal Aid Clinic to accept the appointment and the assistance you've been both to your client and the court. The case is taken under advisement.